Hello and welcome to the Pregnancy Wellness Podcast, hosted by me, Pip, a practicing midwife who is on a mission to provide you with real evidence-based information about pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum. Each episode, I'll be joined by special guests and leading experts to equip you with all the information you need for an empowered journey from conception right through to motherhood. So, with no further ado, let's make a cuppa and get started with today's episode. So this week, it is an absolute privilege to be joined by consultant perinatal psychiatrist, Dr. Rebecca Moore. Rebecca is a mum of two and the founder of Make Birth Better, a national campaign working to raise awareness of birth trauma. Rebecca is an expert in the assessment and treatment of birth trauma with over 20 years of experience working with women and their psychological needs. Rebecca utilises a holistic approach in her work, and amongst all of the amazing things that she is doing to help support women, she is also training currently to be a yoga teacher. Rebecca's role is expansive and incorporates working with and supporting women who have new onset or pre-existing emotional issues through pregnancy and up to a year after birth, both in the NHS and privately. This includes infertility, pregnancy loss, anxiety, depression, OCD, and trauma. She's also currently a leading figure in driving the recognition and awareness around birth trauma, hosting conferences and creating networks, to name just a few ways that Rebecca has been dedicated to spreading her knowledge and improving care and health outcomes for women. I'm therefore so grateful to have Rebecca and her wealth of experience and enthusiasm for this topic joining me today. So welcome, Rebecca, and thank you.
Oh, thank you. Wow, that doesn't sound like me. That's great.
It most definitely is you. It most definitely is. We've certainly got the expert on the subject. So I'm really grateful for your time, because I know you're a very busy lady and dedicated to lots of amazing projects.
No, you're very welcome. I'm always available to kind of talk about these issues because I'm just very passionate about them. So thank you for the opportunity.
That's brilliant. And like you say, we really need to raise awareness and kind of recognise what birth trauma is and what it isn't, I suppose, as well. Do you mind just kind of discussing a little bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's a really good point to start from, because I think depending on what you're reading and where you're looking, you can often see lots of different ways that trauma might be described. So, you know, you can see birth trauma or perinatal trauma or a traumatic birth, and sometimes you see a postnatal PTSD. And I think, you know, those terms are not always well defined depending on where you're looking for information, and that can be really confusing for people trying to navigate. I just want to know what's going on for me at this point. So I think when we talk about trauma, the key thing to think about that is related to your birth is that, you know, it's completely subjective to you and what your story and what you experienced. And that might be in pregnancy, during your birth, postnatally, or all of those things. And it might be one thing, or it might be 10 things. So every single woman or partner indeed is going to have a different story around birth trauma. But really, when we're talking about trauma, we're thinking about an experience that you really feel stuck on and you can't quite move beyond, and that perhaps you're replaying or reliving in different ways all the time. Now, trauma is a spectrum. So, you know, for a woman having a traumatic birth, they might have symptoms and feelings that last them for a week or a month or a year. And some of that group will go on to develop a clinical PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, but some won't. And so it's really, really important that women, you know, are able to see somebody who can confidently say to them, look, this is what is going on for you. Because otherwise, I think for a lot of women, they're left with these really big, difficult feelings and don't really know how to seek help or what to do with that. So trauma can, you know, is very common. It really is common for women around their maternity journey sometimes. So it's really about thinking about it as your story. And I think often there can be a difficulty with the word trauma even, because sometimes it can seem too big. And I think as women, we're really good at minimizing what we're feeling and just kind of putting our heads down and getting on with things, particularly as a new mom, because you sort of have to be able to do that to a certain degree. So, you know, if you can't perhaps think of yourself in those terms, think about it as a really difficult experience that sort of feels like it's with you all the time, that you can't quite get beyond. It doesn't matter what you call it, you know. So if trauma doesn't feel the right thing for you, you don't have to use that term also.
Yeah, that's really important, because I think for women that perhaps birth trauma isn't a kind of name that they are familiar with, mm-hmm. and perhaps a name that they're more familiar with is postnatal depression. But it's important, I suppose, that we recognize these are quite different things, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very different. So, you know, if you just have trauma, or just have trauma, I mean, you know, that's a huge thing to be having. You will have a different set of symptoms and feelings usually to if you have a depression. And often people don't know quite what's going on, but they know that they don't feel depressed. And then it's really frustrating when people sort of are saying to them, perhaps you're depressed, which often happens, unfortunately. So, you know, they have distinct, you know, feelings and emotions and symptoms and signs associated with them that sometimes overlap, but are usually quite easy to distinguish. So it's really important that we get it right for women, because you don't want to send somebody off down a pathway of treatment that's not right for them. You can, of course, get depressed after having had a traumatic birth, but it's important to recognize the trauma in its own right as well, because that's a big part of the picture of, you know, what you need to heal from and process.
Yeah, definitely. And we kind of alluded to the fact that actually birth trauma is quite a common thing for women to be experiencing. But given the fact that we don't generally recognize it in the same way we might recognize things like PTSD or postnatal depression, kind of how common is it? And are we kind of underestimating, I guess, because we don't really know that we're recognizing it in all cases?
Yeah, so it's very common. All of the literature, and actually there's some really good studies now, probably underestimate. So an underestimation would be that 1 in 5 women, 20%, suffer from some kind of traumatic experience around birth. I think other studies, you look at them and it's 40%.
Wow,
it's probably somewhere in the middle. So, you know, for me, I suspect it's probably around 1 in 3, because I think there's a big group of women that probably never get picked up or never tell anybody how they're feeling. But, you know, this is a really big group of women that are walking away from their birth experience feeling that it was very, very difficult for them. So it is really, really common. And then certain women, you know, are more vulnerable to finding their birth traumatic. And then a proportion of the people that find birth traumatic will then go on to develop PTSD. So that's probably around 5 to 8%, again, depending on which studies you look at. But if you think about, you know, 1 in 5 to potentially 1 in 3 women giving birth on any day, walking away feeling traumatized in some way, that's really huge numbers of women. So that's why it's really, really important that we get better at thinking about this, asking the questions, and then knowing how to support women if they're saying, yes, actually, that's me.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, that's huge numbers every single day. And birth isn't going anywhere, you know, it's only going to increase. And therefore, trauma is going to mirror that. So it's something we need to work on. And there's so much work that needs to be done. I couldn't agree more. And I think when we think of the term trauma, we think of something maybe catastrophic or some major emergency or something really alarming and out of the ordinary. But that's not the case, is it? Because that's not necessarily happening in 1 to 3 or 1 to 5 women's birth. So what could women have that may kind of trigger a trauma or might feel traumatic to them?
Yeah, so I think that is a common thing, is that, you know, people just say, well, isn't that to do with war, or isn't that soldiers? And really, you know, trauma is defined as an event that feels to that person completely out of control, or feels where you feel utterly helpless or terrified or scared or frightened. So that doesn't, you know, need to be something like war. You know, trauma can happen after birth. It can happen after an unexpected medical illness. It could happen after a car accident, after a divorce, after a perinatal loss. You know, these are all traumas. And sorry, I've forgotten the other part of the question that you asked me.
No, not at all. No, it's fine. I just wonder whether, sort of, when we think about... Yeah, so whether that's a big emergency or whether it's something kind of...
My brain just went completely fuzzy.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Yes, so it is, you know, it is back to that subjectivity of that, you know, if you put 10 women who would say, yes, I found something about my birth very, very difficult and distressing and traumatic, they would all identify very, very different things. But I suppose broadly, you can think about it as being groups of thirds. So for a third of women, you know, there perhaps has been a medical emergency as part of that trauma. So something has happened, perhaps there's been a concern about baby, or they've been rushed to theatre unexpectedly, or they've had a bleed, or they've perhaps had a tear, a physical birth injury. And then for about a third of women, it's something based much more around baby. So it might be that, you know, baby has been unexpectedly unwell, excuse me, when they've been born, or they've had to go to intensive care, or, you know, perhaps there's been a prior loss. So, you know, that group, it's more focused around the baby. But actually, I would say, although, you know, in the literature, it's about a third, the group that I most often here is about those interpersonal skills. So that is very much about how you are made to feel during your birth. And I think that's the bit that is probably growing. And I think we can go on and talk about why that might be the case. And I think that's also a real group of opportunity where we have an opportunity to change that and reduce that trauma. So that's typically women feeling alone, unheard, dismissed, that their pain requests are not heard, not met, belittled, that people make comments that are unkind, that there's a lack of compassion, that there's a lack of kindness, that they feel unsafe. And I think you only have to look at the sort of the recent Cumberledge review to be able to see that, you know, women's stories are often not heard or dismissed. And actually, those are, you know, the stories where women will be able to tell you, sometimes 10 years down the line, the exact comment that somebody made to them that forever loops in their head, and they will never forget the way it was said to them or how it was said to them. And they'll be able to tell you what that person was wearing, and, you know, how their face, can still see their face. So those interpersonal skills really, really matter. And of course, you can have a mixture of all three. So it might be that all, you know, there are different strands coming in. And I suppose the other things that kind of happen, you know, it can be if you have a very, very quick labour, you can imagine why you can feel out of control and helpless and shocked. So, you know, people delivering much more rapidly than expected, or conversely, a very, very long labour where you're getting very tired, you feel your pain control's not being managed, and then perhaps it becomes very medicalised at the very end. So there are all kinds of different unique factors. But I think for me, the interpersonal group is certainly a group that I hear all the time. It's very, very often about how women are being made to feel. And that is really upsetting, because so many of those things, as professionals, we really ought to be getting right. And, you know, you would hope are part of just our day-to-day good practice. If you're no longer able to be kind to a woman during her birth, then we really have got some things to tackle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Rebecca. I think that's really sad that I understand when there's the rapid birth or the emergencies that some of that trauma unpicking is really difficult to avoid. And actually that support afterwards is where we need to be really concentrating. But like you say, those a lack of kindness or compassion is completely inexcusable in any kind of care setting, but particularly in that maternity care setting, because for these women, it might be the only time, especially if it is a traumatic experience, that they come through our services. And having a baby should be the most monumentous and beautiful experience. So the idea that this amount of women are leaving our service feeling this way, it really fills me with a lot of sadness, but also a lot of motivation, with especially looking at the work that you're doing. We've got to change this and we've got to get it right, because we're doing women a huge injustice. We can make our care as safe and as technically brilliant as we can, but if we can't do that with kindness and compassion, then it kind of feels wasted, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I will talk to people where they've had this whole catalogue of things happen to them that, you know, you think, my goodness, and actually they walk away feeling okay. And the difference is always a person, a human being who has sat with them, held their hand, been calm, been kind, allowed them to ask questions, explained what's going on, acknowledged that they feel frightened, you know, just been with them through that journey in a very human way. You know, so these things really, really matter. And that's where I think, you know, it's so important as midwives in particular, you know, because I think often people underestimate that. They forget the value of that in their day-to-day journey, you know, work, because it's busy. It's always, the pace is always busy. But, you know, these tiny gestures that in reality take seconds or minutes are massively powerful within trauma, particularly. So, you know, every single midwife can do so, so much, you know, to really improve the outcomes for women here.
And like you say, it doesn't take a lot. It is that holding someone's hand and having that eye contact and just asking them what their questions are and explaining things and making sure, I guess, women feel heard, because especially in the kind of rushed day-to-day services, or if there is an emergency situation, that can be lost, and that feeling of loss of control and loss of empowerment can just have such kind of catastrophic effects for that woman going forward, can't it?
Yeah, really, really, really can. And, you know, has not just for the woman, but the whole ripple effect for the family, for the relationship, for the children, intergenerational trauma we know more about now, for future pregnancies, for potentially not having future pregnancies because your first experience has been so difficult. So, you know, these are not just events of one day. They are events over a lifetime and several lifetimes. So they really, really matter.
Yeah, definitely. And I always try and explain to some of the students and things that come through our service, because they worry so much, and rightly so, about getting certain skills down. And I say that people aren't going to remember whether their blood pressure was done on time, but they are going to remember whether that cuff was put on gently and they were chatted to and you were explaining why you did it and it was done with that kindness that costs us nothing, but it's just so important. And I like to think that no one goes into a caring profession with the intention of being anything other than kind, but I think it can get just, I guess, a little bit forgotten when you're focusing on other things, and we really need to remind ourselves about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a whole second conversation, is that, you know, we need to look at why might it be that people working within maternity services are losing the ability to be kind and compassionate, because of course they're all kind and compassionate people. You know, they nobody goes into that role or trains or works that hard with the intent to do harm. You know, they're amazing practitioners. So I think the bigger issue is, why are people feeling or not able to do that consistently over time? And I think, you know, that's a really important part of the birth trauma picture, because actually what we need to do is not just care for women and their families, but also be caring for our teams. And I think, you know, we all know that there are record amounts of burnout and stress in in NHS teams, particularly in, you know, in maternity teams, there are huge rates of people leaving the profession, both in midwifery and in obstetrics. And again, we need to be thinking, why is that happening, and what can we do to prevent that? And I think part of the picture is because, you know, work is always going to be busy in the NHS. You know, the pace is very, very relentless at times. So we need to be a lot better at giving teams the support they need to maintain their own ability to be compassionate. Because of course people will get burnt out and fatigued if they're just doing all the time. You know, we are human too. We are not machines. We are seeing things. We are, you know, exposed to trauma in a secondary way as well. So I think a part of the birth trauma picture needs to also be much better care and reflective practice and training and support and breaks and work-life balance. You know, I personally think how to manage your work-life balance is one of the greatest skills that you need to learn as a healthcare practitioner, and really we should be teaching it to our students so that they learn how to do it, because nobody will ever ask you to do less or take more holidays within the NHS, you know, so you need to be able to learn to do that yourself, you know, to be able to be the best you at work. Yeah. And, you know, it took me a long time to learn how to do that myself, because most of us as healthcare professionals are people pleasers. We want to say yes, we want to help people, and that's all brilliant. But, you know, it can feel like it just becomes too much. So I really think that we ought to be teaching people as trainees and students how to manage that, because that is actually a huge skill and quite way harder than, you know, it seems.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think personally, it's probably the only kind of in the last year that I've learned the art of saying no, and that actually no one's actually going to be offended. I always thought people would think, oh my goodness, that's awful that Pip's saying no, but actually there's a line full of other people that are more than happy and actually welcoming to do that particular task. So it's okay to do that. And I guess it's okay to recognize as a healthcare professional that you can be traumatized from your workplace. You see some things that lots of people will never see in their lifetime, and you might see that at the end of one shift and you're back in kind of 10 hours later and there's not that time to deal with it. So actually it's okay to take that time to recognize that maybe you need some help as well. And I think that's something else we need to raise awareness of as well, like kind of the trauma for everybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's been lots of work recently around PTSD and trauma symptoms within maternity services. And I think that's very well established that, you know, there are quite high rates of undiagnosed PTSD in quite a few obstetricians and midwives. And again, that needs to be part of being a completely trauma-informed service where you think about all of these different aspects and layers of trauma and, you know, make it more easy for people to talk about traumatic experiences, have a team debrief, have an individual debrief, be able to access services without stigma themselves. And, you know, to really be thinking about and talking about trauma within services, I think is not really happening everywhere as yet. And I think that also needs to really change.
Yeah, definitely. There's massive scope to improve that, isn't there? And it's interesting that as midwives and as women, because we're not two separate entities, yeah. You know, women, midwives are women. We're working together. We're working for the same goals and we should be a team. And yet we're both exposed to this massive, massive trauma. And yet we all share the same stigma discussing it. It seems mad, and we need to work on it for sure.
I think there's, you know, a lot of fear, understandably. And, you know, it's the same with women with perinatal mental illnesses. Many don't ever disclose because they're afraid of how they'll be judged or perceived. And I think it's very much the same for healthcare professionals. You know, they worry, what will happen? You know, what will that mean for me? Will it affect my ability to progress my career? Will I be perceived differently by colleagues? And you know, this is a... feeds into a whole broader discussion about the way we still see mental health. You know, that although there have been huge gains and strides, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, and we do talk about it a lot more openly in many ways. And I think, you know, people are more aware of the need to look after your mental health. But I still think, you know, for many people, when they actually experience it themselves, they still feel all of those feelings of shame and guilt and stigma. And so, you know, it's easy to be more aware, but when it actually is happening to you, I think that's a very different thing.
That's true, isn't it? We almost feel like we're kind of shielded from it, or we've got this armor where it won't affect us. And then when it does, you're like, oh my goodness, how do I deal with this thing that's going on? And that can definitely be a massive challenge. So I wonder, is there kind of things that predispose women or healthcare professionals actually to trauma, kind of pre-existing mental health or anything else?
So absolutely. So if you've had a previous PTSD, then clearly that is something that can make you more vulnerable. If you've had depression and anxiety, it makes you slightly more likely to find birth traumatic. A group that find birth traumatic often is those that have a history of sexual abuse or sexual assault. And you know, they really need a lot of support and specialist birth planning, really. And that can really help massively to reduce that happening. And then, you know, there are certainly, there's lots of focus now on sort of women with more medical diagnoses throughout pregnancy and how that might predispose them to finding birth traumatic. So one group that, you know, for me, I've been particularly interested in because I had this is the hyperemesis group. So they are significantly much more likely to have PTSD after birth as well. So yeah, there's definitely, you know, things that we can look at in people's stories previously to think, gosh, yes, we need to be aware of this, and not assuming that birth's going to be traumatic, but thinking, what are we going to do now in pregnancy to really help support you through your maternity journey? So definitely all of those things for women. And the same with you know, members of staff, if they've had their own prior mental health diagnoses, particularly depression, anxiety, PTSD, you know, they can be much more likely to go on and develop trauma as a result of what they're exposed to at work.
The hyperemesis is really interesting, actually, because that's not an association you would automatically make. Is that because of the kind of, I guess, and more of a negative connotation in terms of the start of their pregnancy? Or is it linked to, I don't know, hormonal things? Or
I think it's, you know, as a group, because again, you know, you could look at the hyperemesis group and think that, you know, the care that a lot of women get with hyperemesis is very variable. Some people get an amazing service, some people don't really get any specialist service at all. And I think, you know, as a group, most of them probably are becoming slightly depressed or anxious in pregnancy just because they're having such a tough and difficult time. And then so they're sort of set up and primed to find birth difficult. And, you know, remember, they're often really physically depleted. They've lost huge amounts of weight, or they just physically worry that they're not going to have the strength to birth. So I think it's a whole, you know, mixture of things that does make it much more difficult. I think alongside of that, you know, for a lot of the hyperemesis group, they perhaps do find it difficult to connect with baby because, you know, there's this sort of very difficult thing of wanting to be pregnant, but baby is making you feel utterly terrible. So I think for a lot of women, they have very mixed emotions about the pregnancy. So you can see how all of those factors combined, you know, would make birth quite challenging.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. The things that perhaps we might not have thought about, but actually that's something for women to sort of bear in mind and potentially get some help and support, I guess, earlier if that's one of the symptoms that they're unfortunately presented with. And I wonder as well, especially when there is the kind of traumas where there's an emergency bell or there's a bleed or there's a complication with a baby, and there is more often than not someone else looking onto that in terms of a birth partner. So do they commonly also fall into the kind of birth trauma group? Because sometimes that bird's eye view is worse than it kind of happening to yourself in a different way.
Yeah. So birth partners can absolutely be affected by birth trauma and have a traumatic experience. I think the data around that is small but rapidly growing, and there's a lot of focus around making sure that we know how these experiences might feel for partners. So there is, you know, a growing literature around fathers and their own experiences of traumatic births. And I think you're right, you know, you'll often, when you speak to couples, you know, they will both be traumatized, but they will give very subtly different sides of a story. And, you know, women will perhaps say, I don't really remember that much of that bit. And then that bit will be the bit that dad watching on in the corner of the room felt most traumatized by, because you can see why that would be the case. You know, if you feel completely powerless and helpless and you're watching your most beloved person in pain and fearing that they're at risk of, you know, a significant injury or even death in a worst case scenario. And I think, you know, physically dads often feel really sidelined. You know, they are often literally at the side of the room, and perhaps in that dramatic moment, people aren't really talking to them, which of course is right in that moment, because the focus has to be on mum. Or, you know, mum's been whisked off to theatre and dad's sort of left alone in a room thinking, I don't really know what just happened there, you know. And often dads will talk to me about the fact that, you know, nobody was coming back to them, they didn't know what was happening, they were desperate for information, you know, they felt very sort of excluded from that process. So yes, absolutely, dads can experience trauma symptoms as well.
Definitely. My heart breaks for dads when wives or partners are rushed off to theatre and they're left in the room. And sometimes they're left in the room with this brand new baby they've no idea what to do with as well. So not only are they really concerned for their loved one who's suddenly been rushed off with this massive team of strangers, they're then left with this newborn baby thinking, oh my goodness, what do I do with he or she? And it's a lot in one go, isn't it? And it's probably not what they expected.
No, I think, you know, that's often the thing. It's the suddenness of it and the shockingness of it and the out of ordinariness of it all. And, you know, people will commonly say, it just felt like I was in a dream. It just felt really surreal. I couldn't believe this was happening. It felt like an out of body experience sometimes, or like I was watching a movie. And those are all really common descriptions of being in shock and being traumatized in that moment. And you'll often hear people saying that, you know, of how things began to unfold, they just couldn't believe what was happening and it felt very, very dreamlike.
Yeah, it's so challenging, isn't it? And I suppose for women who have identified a birth trauma or have made that amazing, brave step of seeking out help, which I appreciate can be a whole other challenge in itself with anything like this, but kind of what does a treatment for birth trauma kind of look like? What sort of shape does that hold?
Yeah, so I think, you know, you're right. The first step is to try and sort of gently recognize it yourself. And that can be the hardest part, actually, because, you know, whether you're a first time mum or a fifth, you know, you're physically depleted, you're tired, you've got a whole host of things going on. It can be really difficult to tease out, is this normal? Is this not normal feeling? So I think, you know, just starting to try to gently recognize that is a huge thing. And then it's about trying to tell somebody or let somebody know if you can, or seek support from somebody else to help you get to talk to somebody. You know, usually that's going to be via GP or health visitor for most women. And like you said, you know, I recognize that can be a hugely variable response. Sometimes it's brilliant, sometimes it's terrible. And sometimes you might need to go back, or, you know, you might need to get a second opinion. I think for some people, writing it down can be really helpful because they probably can't quite yet say it. It's too much. So, you know, you can write it and take it and show and ask somebody to read it for you. And then it, you know, for me, it should be, your treatment should be completely unique for you, because dependent on what you need or what you feel would be helpful for you, there are lots and lots of different ways to heal from trauma. So it might be that you have some therapy with a trauma specialist offering you a specialist type of therapy. It might be that you want to take medication. It might be that you want to use exercise. It might be that you just want to speak to somebody who's lived through that. So you might use something online, a Facebook group, or a call a helpline, or speak to people on Instagram. It's about really sort of cherry picking what you feel able to do. I think social media in particular, you know, for all its woes, has, you know, in many ways been amazing for women, because there are lots of beautiful spaces where women can feel very heard and very seen and very safe. And sometimes you don't have to even comment. You can just be reading it and think, oh, right. Yeah, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. That is okay, that I can heal from this. So I think social media for a lot of women can be really helpful, because, you know, they may not want to see a psychiatrist or go and seek help from a professional, but they will feel able to speak freely anonymously online. So I think it's about choosing, you know, what feels helpful for you. I think the other thing is, you know, physically, as women, I think trauma is often held very physically. So sometimes we might be reliving our trauma in our minds or our sleep or our nightmares, but we can often feel it in our body. So it might be pain around our cesarean scar, or new pains or new aches or headaches or more IBS, or, you know, so it's often a very bodily felt experience. So sometimes it might be physical treatments can be helpful. So whether that's exercise, or you have a scar massage, or see a pelvic health physiotherapist specialist. Sometimes it might be couple therapy. It might be that that's what you need. Or sometimes it might be parent-infant therapy. So it's about, you know, the main way it might play out is you can't connect to baby, or you can't stop worrying about baby. So, you know, there are a whole host of different ways. And what, you know, I'm always just really keen for is that women are aware of all these different ways to heal, that they're not just given a prescription, or they're not just told it's only therapy, because both of those are great options, but they're not the only options. They should never be the only options. You should be able to think about all the different aspects of your life and how you might help trauma heal.
Yeah, it's important we recognize, isn't it, that we're all individuals, and there's never going to be a kind of one size fits all. And yeah, I know women, especially when they make that amazing, brave first step of seeking help and recognizing that there is a problem, that can sometimes be really, I guess, confusing and complicated for you to get your head around yourself. Because especially with birth trauma, if you feel that something, any aspect, I suppose, of your birth, be it that there was a time when you didn't feel in control, you didn't feel listened to, or there was concern potentially for you or your baby's life, then you have had a trauma. It doesn't have to fit a specific set of symptoms, doesn't it? So it's, I guess, a bit more vague to diagnose. But if you feel there's been something that's traumatic, then you have got a birth trauma, and that's when it's important that we try and unpick that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I would challenge that, you know, from my point of view. I mean, I know I'm talking as somebody who hears these stories all the time, but actually, yeah, it's not difficult to diagnose, because what you have to do is listen. What you have to do is give a woman a space and say, how was your birth? How did it feel for you? How's it feeling now? Now, that's not difficult. You know, what is difficult sometimes is giving women enough time, you know, to really hear their story. And what doesn't happen for women is that opportunity often. So few women are actually asked about their birth. You know, they're asked about their feeding, they're asked about their bleeding, they're asked about their contraception, but they're never really meaningfully asked, like, how was your birth for you? How are you feeling about it now? And then actually what's hard for a lot of professionals, and there's loads of literature to support this, and I'm talking mainly about doctors who are terrible at this, is that they interrupt. You know, the average, I think there was a study done by Stanford last year where it said that in most consultations, people are interrupted after 30 seconds.
Wow, yeah.
You can't tell a birth story in 30 seconds. So actually actively listening to women and giving them a space to unpick it all can sometimes be the only treatment that's needed, because they're heard and they're validated. And, you know, if you feel some part of your birth was difficult or wrong or stressful or frightening, that's where we start from. That's your story. That's never wrong. You know, it matters that we unpick this and we hear it and we give pause to it and we say, I'm sorry that, you know, it felt like that for you. And then, you know, you may or may not have lots of other different symptoms. You know, you may feel that you're kind of reliving it and replaying your birth and you just want to talk about it all the time, or you don't want to talk about it ever, or, you know, you can't go near a hospital, or you don't want to hear anybody else's birth story, or you don't want to have sex because you might get pregnant again, or you can't sleep because you're having nightmares. So, you know, it's actually very easy to tease out those symptoms, and they are not the same as depression. So I think a big part of it has to be helping our colleagues in health visiting and general practice to feel able to do that. There's a birth trauma scale now, you know, which is about the same length of time to complete as an Edinburgh postnatal depression scale, which most people feel confident using. It's very simple. So why aren't we training people to do a birth trauma scale? You know, we have a scale now specifically for birth trauma that takes, I would say less than 5 minutes to complete. So why aren't we doing this? Because, you know, I think we have got really good at diagnosing postnatal depression. And that is, of course, it's important and it's so brilliant. But, you know, not all postnatal illness is depression. And, you know, we really need to be able to recognise it when it's trauma.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing point, Rebecca. And kind of when I alluded to the kind of difficulties, I think I was thinking more from a mother's perspective than a healthcare professional, because I think for them to maybe identify a trauma, especially if it's not something that we might consider a typical traumatic event, for them could be a bit more complicated. And that's where for us as healthcare professionals, we're in such a powerful position to help them recognize and identify and start a pathway, especially in that first postpartum period when we're having regular kind of contact with women. So they haven't then got to make that step of going and accessing someone independently. We can kind of trigger that pathway for them, and which surely has only kind of got to help them to seek treatment early.
I think, you know, so I'd say to women, you know, it probably goes two ways, and think of this is very simplistic, but, you know, if your birth, either two things: one, you just cannot think about it at all or talk about it, and you're trying so hard not to think about it or talk about it, because whenever you do, you just feel really overwhelmingly distressed. That's one thing that might suggest that it's been a traumatic experience for you. The other is the other way around, where you literally cannot stop thinking about it to the degree that it feels like it's in your mind all the time. Like you can't stop talking about it. You want to replay it and relive it over and over and over again, to a degree where you can't really be in the here and now because you're just thinking about it all the time. Now, those are two fairly easy ways that you or your partner or your family or those around you might just think, gosh, this is still happening like 3 months down the line. Maybe we should just have a think about that with somebody that can really sit and think about it with us. So I think they're, you know, two quite good ways to think about, you know, so it's not that you're feeling low all the time, that you don't want to go out, that you're not enjoying things. It's that you cannot really think about your birth, or you're always thinking about your birth. And that might be, you know, at 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, you know, and that is telling you something. That is telling you that there is just something there that would be really helpful to think about with somebody and explore.
Yeah, that's really useful, Becca. And especially when we talk about the time scale, and actually there isn't a time scale. It could be imminent, or it could be later on, or after another pregnancy. Sometimes that fear of having to go through the experience again can kind of start to trigger things. And I can imagine for women who have either of those kind of experiences on that spectrum, or kind of anything in between, I suppose, the impact that would have on their bonding with their baby, and actually the strains and things on their relationship could be quite large as well.
Yeah, I think it's massive. So I think, you know, and I think it's so difficult for women, because, you know, you're often left in a position where you're absolutely mourning and grieving your birth experience whilst also loving your baby, but your baby is so linked to your birth experience that it can be hard to sort of unpick that as your story together. So often, you know, women will struggle to connect, or they will be sort of over connected and think something else bad is going to happen. So I need to check my baby all the time. I'm getting up to check their breathing. I don't want anybody else to hold them. I don't want to ever leave them alone. So it can have really huge, you know, effect for that bond with mum and baby, all of which, you know, is really easy to help, you know, soothe and promote and connect. And, you know, invariably women are doing a brilliant job of doing it, the parenting bit, but it's just so hard to hold all those conflicting feelings and emotions at the same time. And then with partners, I think, you know, it's often after a trauma, you can often feel really irritable and angry that this has happened to you. And so, you know, who lives with you all the time? Your partner. So you tend to, you know, see people arguing or being irritable, or, you know, sometimes it can be, you know, really difficult sort of in your sexual relationship, because, like I said, you're frightened of getting pregnant again. Or, you know, for some women, it can feel like it was very, very difficult in that time where people were touching you, you know, that part of your birth where people were touching your tummy and were examining you and were, and then you tie that with something sexual, you know. So sometimes for women, it's if their partner touches them in a certain place during sex, it can be really triggering and can make them feel like they're back giving birth again. So there can be really huge sexual impact for couples. It's often that, you know, women delay having another pregnancy a lot longer when they've had a traumatic experience. Or it might be that, you know, it plays out in your work, in that you don't, you know, I've seen people where they were paramedics or doctors or midwives and don't feel able to go back to work because they've had that experience and feel that they've lost their confidence. So it can really ripple out in so many ways. You know, again, that you really need to be able to get treatment going and stop that.
And that kind of, it really alludes to kind of the enormity of the issue if we're not detecting it and correcting it. Yeah. So I suppose the ideal is that we work to prevent birth trauma. And yeah. I know we kind of alluded to the things around kind of compassion and kindness for women. And anyone that follows me on social media will understand my kind of enthusiasm for antenatal education, because I think we can really do women a massive injustice by sometimes educating in a really unrealistic way or a very idealistic way. So that actually when it comes to the kind of twists and turns of labour, because unfortunately these babies tend to make the rules, don't they? And we kind of, to some extent, are led by them. But it means it's really difficult for women to make a really informed and empowered choice if the information they've been given in that prenatal period isn't supporting the real kind of everyday evidence and the things that are going on for them at that time. So that can really, I think, exacerbate that kind of loss of control feeling.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I think, you know, a thing that needs to change and will help reduce trauma for some women is how we provide antenatal education. So I think it is absolutely that, about having more realistic discussions. And I think it's about thinking with women about all the what ifs. So you don't just have a plan A, you have a plan A to Z. And you think about, you know, if I need to go to theatre, what might that look like? How might I feel in control? So it's about hearing the full range of birth stories. It's about breaking down this sort of horrible narrative of this being all good or this being all bad, and it being actually, for all of us, it's somewhere in between. And, you know, it's hearing all the birth stories so that people are aware in a way that is not frightening, but like you say, empowering. And I really think that, you know, a missing part of that picture is partners, and that they need to be more fully involved. And I think also it's always about women and their partners having these discussions of, if during birth, temporarily, I'm really exhausted and tired and can't advocate for myself, can you do that for me? And how do I want that to look? And what do I want to happen? Because often that those discussions haven't been had, through no fault of women and their partners. I think we need to be talking about this. I think that, you know, the other thing that should be running alongside that and would help enormously would be continuity of care. So you have the same person each time, so that you do have a space to ask questions that you might feel silly asking to somebody that you've never met before, that you, you know, can be open and honest. And, you know, ideally that person is with you at birth as well as antenatally. I mean, that's the dream scenario, really, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Just have named midwife who is your midwife through the entire journey. And my gosh, that would reduce a lot of trauma for people in one fell swoop. I think the other thing is, I really want women and their partners to feel able to challenge care more, that that's not being difficult, that that's not being a pain, that that is your right. And that if you feel somebody, you just don't gel, or they're not the kind of compassionate person that you want, or that, you know, you just have this sixth sense or instinct that they're not going to be the right person for you, that you feel able to say that at any stage of your maternity journey, and that that is your right. That's not you being difficult. And I think, you know, most people feel very worried to do that, because most people are lovely and they don't want to be seen to be difficult, but I want them to be difficult and know that that's okay. So I think, you know, if you had all of those different things going on, I think the other thing is, you know, is about the way we do consent. You know, I think that if we could have more discussions about consent before we got to birth, and had thought about emergency scenarios in a sort of proactive way, I think that could be really helpful for women. So there are so many things that we can do, but I really think it's going to take a whole shift of how we provide education, and a whole sort of cultural shift around how we do this. I mean, ultimately, really, it should be the women that are in charge and in control at every single step. We should be just there to facilitate and provide that. And I think, you know, we just aren't there yet. I mean, we're way better than, say, the States, you know, in the way we do that. We have, you know, much more of a midwifery-led model of care for most women, which is brilliant. But I think it can still get far too patriarchal, and there are still far too many women being told what they should and could do. And I want that to stop.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it's all about preparing women as opposed to scaring them. So it's the kind of exploring, okay, so for example, if you did have to go for an emergency section and things were moving quite quickly, what would still make you feel in control? And that might be a simple thing, like when you leave that room and there's really bright lights, closing your eyes, taking your music with you, those small things that you can transport throughout your birth journey, wherever, whatever setting that might be, or whatever's happening to you at that point. And as I say, using your voice, like, it's so powerful. So just to say, why, or can you explain that to me? And people aren't going to get upset. And I think women feel suddenly like if a doctor comes in the room or something becomes less normal or away from their birth plan, that they have to kind of shrink into the corner and just accept it. And that's so not the way it should be at all.
But I think I also want to say that, you know, it shouldn't just be on the woman, because, you know, I think of my own labours, you know, and I'm medical and fairly droppy. And, you know, by the end of my labour, I was so exhausted and in so much pain and so tired. I was like 40 hours into a labour that I know I could not have the normal discussions that I would be saying of, what are you doing that for? Why are you doing that for? So it has to be partners as well. I don't want women to feel that they have to take this all on themselves and are responsible for it all themselves. So it has to be women plus partner. And also ideally, you know, whoever's with them as the professional. Because I really don't want women to feel that, you know, or I suppose, you know, I hear from women a lot that they say, I'm normally so confident, I'm normally so good, and I just lost my voice. And then they really beat themselves up about that. And it's like, yes, you know, you did so well at that moment where you had been in pain and not slept for 18 hours, that is in no way a failure. But so I really want the onus to be on us all, not just the woman.
Absolutely. It's got to be a team thing. And I guess the ideal scenario and what we should be looking at as standard for everybody's care is that everybody in that room understands the options, the recommendations, what the woman's and their birth partner's heads are at and what their choices are, and that everyone understands the kind of what ifs and the whys and the plan for going forward, and that we do that as a team. And yeah, I do think that antenatal period is a really golden time to get a lot of that baseline information in, so that we're kind of all starting, I suppose, at the same place as birth progresses, and exploring things as it changes, because things do change quite quickly sometimes. So having that flexibility and that pre-understanding is really important. And for women to understand that everything is a recommendation. We explain the kind of risks and the benefits, and then it's their informed choice, and they should be supported in whatever that might look like for them.
Mm-hmm. And I think even, you know, in an emergency situation, you know, I hear people say this all the time, well, you know, it's an emergency. And, you know, I think you know that there are so few emergencies where you still haven't got a few minutes. You know, even if somebody's going to theatre, it's rare that they literally go in that second. You know, there's usually a tiny window. So we can still be explaining and talking. You can be running along a corridor by a bed and still speaking to somebody. And I think that's the bit that often also gets missed, is that I understand that it's an emergency, and that, you know, there's of course that safety of mum and baby is paramount, but even within those very emergency situations, there are lots of people that, you know, lots of things that we can do. Like, I've heard people speak of the way their anaesthetist spoke to them in theatre that's literally made me want to cry, because it's been so amazingly wonderful. And, you know, they've just said, I felt like they just had me, and I felt so safe, even though I felt so afraid. You know, so tiny things again, language, communication, the way you look at somebody, smiling at somebody, holding their hand, you know, they feel like tiny gestures, but they're not, they're monumental gestures.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is those small acts. I know for sure when we've had some emergencies, I've been putting ladies' stockings on and having eye contact and explaining things. And it might be that you are multitasking because time isn't on your side, but there is always that opportunity just to catch eye contact and have those few moments of, do you understand what's happening? Is this what you want? And I think in those emergency situations, when women feel out of control, it's for them to realise that actually they may have been informed that there's a concern about their baby and the recommendation is to deliver via an emergency cesarean section, but they're in control because it's their body. So they're ultimately making that decision. And although they may feel like there's not much of a decision to be made because the alternative is quite catastrophic, they are still making that decision. And it's a really difficult and challenging decision, but they are in control of that and it's their body.
No, I completely agree. Yeah.
So I suppose for women who feel that they might be suffering a birth trauma, would the kind of initial signposting place, that by their GP, are there any kind of services or resources available they could kind of speak?
Yeah, of course, see their GP or speak to their health visitor. You know, if you don't want to go down that route yet, there's a really, you know, lovely Facebook group with the Birth Trauma Association. You can look at Make Birth Better, like particularly on Instagram. There's a really supportive community there where, you know, people are at different stages of their journey and their healing. And, you know, we'll be able to give advice and support. You could also, you know, look at some of our crib sheets. We have lots of free downloadable crib sheets that explain things like what is trauma, how might it feel. And, you know, sometimes you can print those out and take them with you to your GP just to help sort of start a discussion around, look, I think this might be happening for me. And there's lots and lots of crib sheets there around everything. There's one for partners too. There's one about, you know, how it might feel for you and baby. So there's lots and lots of resources there, which can be really, really helpful.
Amazing. And anyone that comes on the podcast, Rebecca, I always ask for three kind of top tips or suggestions for a woman who may be listening to us now, who thinks that perhaps maybe they can recognize they've got a birth trauma potentially for the first time or something they're dealing with. So what would be your three top tips?
Gosh,
I know, put you on the spot.
So I would say, you know that there is help out there. Know that you can get better. And know that it's never your fault.
I love that. It's really powerful. Thank you so much for your time. And I always love speaking to you. And I hope that this can form another little part in that puzzle of just raising the awareness and getting everybody talking and recognizing and working to prevent birth trauma for all these amazing women out there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think do if you've had a traumatic birth and, you know, you are feeling sort of out there today, not knowing what to do, then, you know, you can always message us at Make Birth Better. We can't give, you know, specific clinical advice, but we can often and do often, you know, signpost women to sort of routes of support. And we have women contacting us from all across the UK and increasingly from all across the world, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, so please do feel able to do that. Do, you know, or ask us questions. Nothing is silly. Nothing is stupid. You know, we are not there to judge you. We are just there to give support.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. If you found it helpful, then please hit subscribe and leave a review. It really does make a huge difference to the number of women we can reach out to and empower. For daily free information, inspiration, or details on our bespoke antenatal education, head over to my Instagram page at midwife_pip. Thank you and see you next time.